From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Well, I can't believe it's December, everyone. I don't know about you, but I'm not being in Chicago. I'm not ready for this snow or this cold, and I'm not ready for the presents and everything else that has to happen between now and the big day. But even before then, it's important that we all focus our hearts and attention on the coming of Christ. This is a beautiful time of year, and I'm so excited to spend it with you for another weekend here on the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN. And we've got a great show ahead for you today. We're going to be talking about Our Lady of Loretto. Her feast day is coming up on December 10th, and we've got Julia Leinberg. She's an expert on all things Italy, and she's going to talk to us again about this fascinating devotion of the flying house that led to Our Lady of Loretto being declared the patron saint of aviation. And we also have Dan Cheeley, church historian, joining us again to talk about the future saint, that is Venerable Fulton Sheen, the only person in the entire world who has an approved miracle by Rome, who isn't quite yet a blessed or a saint. So we're going to be talking to him about the future of that canonization cause and some of the great impact of this future saint, Venerable Fulton J. Sheen. And check out my television show, They Might Be Saints, which airs every Wednesday, at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. On December 13th, we've got They Might Be Saints, Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovic. She had a short but impactful life, and I'll be presenting the case for canonization for this Sister of Charity, which includes the only known cure of bilateral macular degeneration, which was used for her beatification. One of my favorite episodes is coming right up. And check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter about Loretto, appropriately. The Holy House of Loretto is where the Virgin Mary is believed to have lived and received the Annunciation. But how did it get from Nazareth to its current home in Italy? I will investigate. So check that one out on the next episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter. And later in the show, we're going to be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project, like we always do. For each and every day of the calendar year, we've got a different Marian devotion that lines up exactly to that date. And for December 3rd, we've got Our Lady of Dedinia in Turkey in the year 363. And the might-be saint of the day is Blessed Maria Angela Astorch, who lived from 1592 to 1665 in Spain. And her feast day is today. And also, the question of the week, has there ever been a visionary who did not lead a virtuous life? And I'll see if I can answer that one about approved Marian visionaries in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We talk about this each and every week, and people can follow the miracles happening all around the world if they connect to my Facebook feed of The Miracle Hunter or my Instagram, which has over 25,000 followers. You can be one of them, and you can find out about the miracles happening all around the world. And when we look at miracles, we talk about those cases of people on the path to sainthood who need a couple of miracles, perhaps, in order to be declared a saint by Rome. And then there's those people who maybe only need one miracle. And those, of course, are the martyrs. And there's an exciting new project, a new commission that's beginning its work that you may or may not have heard about. The Commission of the New Martyrs is beginning its work, and it's the Witnesses of the Faith established by Pope Francis for the Jubilee of 2025. It met for the first time at the beginning of this month, and in a statement from the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints published on November 13th, it created in July, in light of the Jubilee year of 2025, a commission with a task to catalog all Christians, not just Catholics, from 2000 until today, quote, who have shed their blood to confess Christ and bear witness to his gospel. Quote, we are preparing to enter into the heart of recognition of and encounter with these witnesses whose lives and deaths are marked by the gospel, love for the weakest, the search for peace, and the painful confrontation with multiple designs of evil, without, however, abandoning trust in the good, end quote. That's what the statement says. And so the commission's first phase of work will focus on looking into the lives of Christians whose lives were cut short or given in some way to bear witness to the gospel. That's what the statement explains. And to look into these stories, the commission is going to lean on research done by Fides, the news agency of the Pontifical Mission Society, by local bishops and religious congregations. and by anyone else who keeps the memory of these individuals alive. So we're excited about this project, and we'll report more about what's going on with that, but it's just out of the gate now, and this is a commission of martyrs, of Christians, not just Catholics. So I think this is groundbreaking in so many ways, and we'll see if some saints actually are named as a result of this commission. So we'll keep you up to date on the progress in the future weeks and months and years ahead. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. Each week we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. And last week we talked about Our Lady of Guadalupe and the Flower World Prophecy, and was an interesting book. Check that interview out if you go to ewtn.com/radio or go to the app and look at the archives. Last week we spoke with the authors of that book, and it's really a fascinating look at Our Lady of Guadalupe, something that happened 500 years ago, but it's a brand new way to examine the apparitions and those things that predated the apparitions of Our Lady of Guadalupe. So the question from last week was, how many popes have visited the Guadalupe image in Mexico City? And the answer is two: John Paul II and Pope Francis most recently, of course. And I think that all future popes probably will be going there as well. So thanks for everybody who wrote in with that correct answer. Now, the question for this week relates to Our Lady of Loreto, who we'll be talking with Julia Lineberg later in today's program about. And Our Lady of Loreto is considered the patroness of pilots. And which Italian is considered the patron saint of pilots? And again, that question is, which Italian is considered the patron saint of pilots or aviation? So if you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or questions@miraclehunter.com, or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and send me a message that way. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Julia Lineberg about Our Lady of Loreto. Is it believable that the House of Mary really flew with angels? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this program, this radio show, know that I also do a television show on EWTN Television, and that's called Explore with the Miracle Hunter. And coming up this week is an episode of Our Lady of Loreto. Many people know about the Litany of Loreto, and of course that name stems from the devotion to Our Lady of Loreto, according to pious tradition, the house that flew with the guidance of angels and ended up in Loreto in Italy. And so what's fascinating about this is that, of course, we don't see angels carrying houses in our modern day, and of course we might want to chalk it up to pious legend and say, that's something that people believed way back when there was no sophistication to it. But is there some possibility with some scientific research that there is something to that legend? Well, we're so excited today to talk with Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimage, who's taken people many times to the Shrine of Our Lady of Loreto. And she's here with us today to tell us about the fascinating devotion. Thanks so much for being with us again, Julia.
Oh, good morning, Michael, and thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure. And I love Our Lady of Loreto, as you know. So thank you for having me for this episode.
Absolutely. It's so fascinating. I think that it was a fun episode to create for EWTN Television. And I think it's something every year we try to remember it. And I think people who fly on airplanes might do a quick blessing before they fly. They pray to Our Lady of Loreto for a safe flight. And I know that even in the Chicago airport that I fly out of, they have a Loreto chapel in the airport. So she still has a devotion that's alive and well. Now, before we get too far with it, let's trace back the origins of the title of Our Lady of Loreto. Where does this devotion come from?
Well, the house is itself the house in which the Holy Family lived, but more importantly, it is the house where the Word was made flesh. It is the house where the angel Gabriel appeared to our Blessed Lady and announced that she was chosen to be the Mother of God. And in the prayer to Our Lady of Loreto, it's so beautiful. It says, "By your fiat, the Savior of the world descended." And it was in those within those walls. So it happened that in the 13th century, there was a lot of turmoil in the Holy Land, and our Blessed Lady decided that her house was going to be preserved and removed. And it was under the power of the holy angels that the house was taken as, I think it was Pope John the 23rd said, it was taken from Palestine to Croatia, from Croatia to Loreto, where our Blessed Lady designated among the laurels that her house would be preserved for all of Christianity, for all of mankind.
Absolutely amazing. And they still celebrate this coming to Italy, don't they? Every year, La Venuta, they call it. There's some celebration that happens there in Italy, isn't there?
Oh, my goodness, yes. And we call it in the United States the Feast of Our Lady of Loreto on December the 10th. But actually, they in Italy celebrate La Venuta, which is the translocation of the house, on December the 10th. They begin on the vigil, December the 9th, with lighting a special star under the rotunda, and the vigil goes all night. And then the next day, they have a huge mass celebration there in the beautiful basilica for our Blessed Lady. And at one time it was extended to all of Italy, but now they do it mostly right there in Loreto. And this is still very, very well attended, and everything is offered by the cardinal there. That is, his seat is Loreto.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimages. You can find out more about her at marianpilgrimages.com. And we're talking today about Our Lady of Loreto. And Julia, you know me. I'm a little bit annoying or interesting because I'm a skeptic and a believer. You know, I want to believe that, in fact, that this was carried by angels and transported in a miraculous way. But I'm also a skeptic, thinking maybe that's something from an earlier, more pious age where science wasn't really valued as much as it is in our modern day. Has there been any kind of research whatsoever that would suggest that this is actually the house of Mary?
Well, I, too, I just believed because my mother told me it was. But then after that, I started to be a little skeptical as I grew and as I became older. And I thought, you know, let us see if there really is. So having had the privilege of staying in Loreto for an extended period of time, I was able to do some research. And then there was an American film crew that came over and they wanted to do a documentary, which they did, and I assisted with translations and so forth. But we became familiar with a professor, Giorgio Nicolini, who did a lot of scientific research there. And he said, for example, there was this belief that it was actually taken by ship, and the family name was Angeli, which means angels. Mm. So they're like, see, there was, you know, this was all a bunch of pious malarkey. So he did a little bit more research, this Professor Nicolini, and excavating underneath the Holy House, he found and proved and filmed that there was no foundation. In other words, the foundation that exists in Nazareth is still existing, and it meets and corresponds completely with the house that is in Loreto. And Professor Nicolini took a sheet of paper and put it underneath the holy house, and he went around the walls in this tiny little cavern and filmed the fact that the house does not sit on any foundation, and you can actually put paper underneath the house and the ground where it landed. And the floor, which is inside the holy house that we, the pious, would attend mass upon, was put there later.
Fascinating.
It was put there later. Yes. And also, the stones, of course, are the same as the stones found in the Holy Land, but they're held together with mortar that can be found nowhere else. All of the scientific research was done on that mortar, and it, too, again, preserved the fact that the house was never disassembled. And there was something that he also started to do research.
Oh, maybe let's revisit that point. I think that, that's an interesting point that you mentioned, is that we might say that, sure enough, it could be that the house had been disassembled by crusaders, perhaps, from the Holy Land, mm-hmm. and transported in pieces, and then painstakingly put back together with some mortar in Italy, and assembled, and the church built on top of that. But you're suggesting that the mortar that holds those stones together, which are from the Holy Land, and the mortar, which is from the Holy Land, shows no signs of being broken apart and assembled. It's all continuous. Is that correct?
That is correct. And scientific research done by Professor Nicolini and his team proved that the mortar not only came from the Holy Land, but it cannot be replicated by modern days, in modern times. In other words, he did his research in the late 1990s and the early 2000s, and it has not been able to be replicated. That is original mortar from the time of Christ.
Absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimages. You can go to marianpilgrimages.com to find out more about her travels to places like Loreto. We're talking today about Our Lady of Loreto. And I've been fascinated by this story. We look at it sort of with a skeptical eye that perhaps this is pious tradition, that this house was transported by angels. Maybe it wasn't even the house of Mary, but there is some scientific research that suggests that not only is it perhaps originally the house of Mary, but also was transported in one piece, which would imply something other than taking apart and moving it by the family Angeli, which is the theory that's circulated today. Absolutely amazing. Well, Julia, when you look at this house, what strikes you as remarkable about the house of Loreto?
Well, I think about the fact that we are privileged to be able to enter there. And I think about the love that our mother has for us, our Heavenly Mother, that she has preserved this beautiful relic for us. And over the centuries since it was translocated there to Loreto, many saints have visited there physically and in by location. There were beautiful, beautiful stories of St. Veronica Giuliani going in by location, Catherine of Bologna, etc., from those days. But there were two wonderful accounts that stayed with me in my heart. One was Venerable Catherine Emmerich, and she actually, in her visions, saw the house being carried across the land and the sea, and she described it so perfectly that there were seven angels that transported it, three on either side of the abode, and out ahead was one angel with a ray of light from heaven that brought this house across the land and the sea. And I love reading the visions of Catherine Emmerich, because she was the one who was able to find the location or describe the location of Mary's home in Ephesus. So I also had the privilege of knowing one of the friars that was Padre Pio's companion and caretaker for more than 10 years. And I asked him, I said, "Oh, Padre Alessio," it's Padre Alessio Parente, who is deceased now, but your listeners, I'm sure, would know him from the books that he's written, Send Me Your Guardian Angel, Padre Pio, and also about the Holy Souls in Purgatory, Viva right. Padre Pio. So I said, "Father Alessio, did you ever go to Loreto? Did Padre Pio ever go to Loreto?" And he said, "I have to tell you," he said, "I was taking Padre Pio from the church back to his cell, and Padre Pio was walking. This was in the very early 1960s, and Padre Pio was still walking, although slowly, as you know, on his wounded feet. And Father Alessio mentioned to him, "Spiritual father, do you know there is a pilgrimage being organized here in San Giovanni to go to Loreto to celebrate La Venuta?" And he said, "Spiritual father, why don't we go? That way you can offer Mass at the at the Holy House." And Padre Pio stopped, and he looked at Father Alessio, and he said, "My son, if ever I would go to offer the Mass in that Holy House, I would certainly die of infatuation." Now, I know in your wonderful documentary series, you did point out some of the relics that were in the Holy House, and one of them was a bowl from that the Holy Family used, and the other, the altar that is in there. Encased in that altar was the first altar that the apostles offered the Mass in Mary's home. And I kind of think that this beautiful privilege given to us in our day was emphasized by Padre Pio, that this was such a great privilege given to us by our Blessed Lady.
Absolutely amazing. We've been talking today with Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimages about Our Lady of Loreto. And for people who go to the house of Our Lady of Loreto, it's a little bit of a Russian Matryoshka doll setup, in the sense that first you go in the outer basilica, perhaps, and then there's a smaller church or house that's encased in marble, and then you go inside of that, and that's where that original house is. So it's an amazing thing to sort of peel away the layers and to get to that incredible house that some say, scientists amongst them, that this is actually the authentic house of the Virgin Mary. Well, we're so grateful to you, Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimages. Talk to us a little bit before we go about marianpilgrimages.com and how people can join you on trips to Italy to see amazing places like Our Lady of Loreto.
Well, we try and do our best to set up pilgrimages that have a theme, and there are so many beautiful pilgrimage sites in Italy, as you know, in all of Europe. But Loreto, Genizano, which is another fabulous show that you did, Our Lady of Good Counsel, these are Marian pilgrimage sites. We always go to San Giovanni Rotondo because of Padre Pio and our devotion to Padre Pio. And in that area is the site of the very first apparition of Our Lady in Italy, in Coronata. So we try and tie all of these beautiful Marian pilgrimage sites, learning more about, my goodness, the love God has for us with giving us His mother as our mother, and all that she has done in her power to draw us to Him.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Julia Lineberg, for joining us today to talk about Our Lady of Loreto. And I encourage people interested in going to Loreto or visiting Italy with Julia to go check out Marian Pilgrimages, which is marianpilgrimages.com. Thank you so much for Julia for joining us on today's program.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Michael, as always. Thank you.
God bless. That was Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimages. Check her out at marianpilgrimages.com. A fascinating, fascinating discussion about Our Lady of Loreto, whose feast day is upon us on December 10th. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be trying to answer that question of the week. Has there ever been a Marian visionary who did not lead a virtuous life? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world. and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting these emailed questions, or I love getting questions in person when I give talks around the country. I give 20 to 30 talks a year, traveling to different parishes and shrines and conferences. And I'd love to talk about for about 45 minutes, and then afterwards, for 15 minutes or 30 minutes or even more, people will pepper me with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. So I love getting these questions, and I try my best to answer them. And here's a good question that I got from TB. She says, "Dear Miracle Hunter, has there ever been a visionary who has not led a virtuous life? I know some are made saints and others are not, which relates to the approved miracles from petitionary prayer. But has there been any visionaries of apparitions who were not seen as reliable while the apparition itself was still approved? Thank you, TB." Well, thanks for that great question. And of course, there are some saints that stem from Marian apparitions. And I would say that by percentage, you have a pretty good chance of becoming a saint if you have seen Mary in an approved kind of way. Of course, we're talking about St. Catherine Labouré, whose feast day was just this past week. And we also talk about Bernadette Subru of Lourdes, or the Fatima children, or St. Juan Diego. Those are some of the famous ones that many people know. But not every single person who saw Mary is, in fact, a saint. And so we can talk about these various cases, but perhaps the most clear example of this relates to Our Lady of La Salette, where we have Melanie and Maximine, the shepherd children, who receive visions of Mary. And they're the subject of a new program that I'm coming out with on EWTN Explore with the Miracle Hunter La Salette. So we'll learn a lot about them in that program. But when we talk about their lives, Melanie, for example, she became a nun, and she changed orders several times, and she spoke publicly about the secret and changed the secret from time to time, and lived a life that was shrouded in mystery, perhaps we might say. People don't necessarily know what to do with her as a visionary. And then we talk about Maximine, who changed jobs many, many times and lived kind of a troubled and aimless life, you might say. He never denied the apparitions or changed the secrets, you might say, as was the case of Melanie. But in either case, we have these two visionaries who come to us today as we don't know what to make of them. And can we say they lived a virtuous life? Perhaps they did. Perhaps they didn't. But it was a little bit confusing how things unfolded. And we have these famous cases, like I mentioned, of St. Bernadette, who went off to a convent in Nevers and died very young, or St. Catherine Labouré, who went to it, was in a convent and was lost to anonymity, or Juan Diego, who died in old age, but we don't know much about him. So the fact that there are these approved Marian visionaries, but we don't know much about them after their visions, certainly makes it easier. And in the case of Maximine and Melanie, we do know a lot about them and their lives afterwards, which maybe makes it a little bit complicated. So thank you, TB, for your question. So do you have to be a perfect saint, or a saint, you might say, to have an approved Marian apparition approved? Those things don't always go hand in hand, but they often do, sometimes where the sainted, where the visionary is sainted in the end. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and send me a message that way. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary Project. We do this every week. We will look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. And for December 2nd, we've got Our Lady of Didinia from Turkey in the year 1363. And we look at these Marian devotions and apparitions and miracles from all around the world. You all know Fatima, May 13th, or Guadalupe, December 12th, or Lourdes, February 11th. But believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion for each and every day of the calendar year. So for this one, Our Lady of Didinia, we've got legends saying that it was before the shrine of Our Lady of Didinia that St. Basil had begged the Blessed Virgin Mary to remedy the persecution of Christianity being caused by Julian the Apostate. And after 3 days of prayers and fasting, Basil had a vision in which he saw Mary surrounded by celestial soldiery and heard her say, "Go call Mercury to me. He shall kill the blasphemer of my son." He went to the shrine of St. Mercurius, whose sword was first missing, then returned covered in blood. Julian had died on campaign in Persia from a spear that had pierced his liver and intestines, suffering a major hemorrhage from the wound, which ended up killing him. So one of the stranger Marian devotions we have today, it's 365 Days with Mary, Our Lady of Didinia from Turkey. For more information on this fasting devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to 365daywithmary.com. You can pick up the book or you can join the Facebook page of 365 Days with Mary and get a different Marian devotion in your Facebook feed each and every day. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We do this every week where we talk about those people on the path to sainthood. And we're talking about venerables and blesseds and servants of God before they have all their miracles and are declared saints by Rome. And we always like to keep you up to date on who's coming down the pipeline. And on Wednesday, November 8th, the Holy Father received an audience, Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized the same Dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the heroic virtues of the servant of God, Giuseppe Marazzo, the professed priest of the Congregation for the Rogationists of the Heart of Jesus. And he was born in 1917 in San Vito del Normani in Italy, and he died on November 30th of 1992 in Messina, also in Italy. And according to the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints website, he was a professed priest of this Rogationist order of the Heart of Jesus, and his charity towards God was the fulcrum of his life. Grace is the source of all his actions, the presupposition of every work, the fruit of always intense and constant prayer. So that's a little summary they give for servant of God, now venerable, Giuseppe Marazzo. With one miracle, he will be declared blessed, and a second miracle, he will be named Saint Giuseppe. Each week, we look at the might-be saint of the day. That's the person on the path to sainthood. That's a servant of God, venerable or blessed, whose death anniversary or feast day lines up exactly to the day's date. For today, December 2nd, we've got Blessed Maria Angela Astorch, who lived from 1592 to 1665 in Spain. And she was born on September 1st in 1592 in Barcelona in Spain, and she was raised in a pious family. And a poor Clare Capuchin nun in Barcelona, she entered the order on the 16th of September in 1603, and she made her religious profession in 1609. She became the novice mistress and director of formation and founded a monastery in Saragossa in Spain on May 9th, 1614, and later became the abbess there in 1621. And she founded a monastery in Murcia in 1645, where she served as the abbess until 1665. She spent her spare time studying the sacred texts and the great church writers, and she came to a profound understanding of the breviary, the schedule of prayers and hymns recited each and every day. And she was a mystic and visionary who could see and communicate with her guardian angel, according to the stories. And she died on December 2nd, 1665 in Murcia, and her body is said to be incorrupt. And she was declared venerable on September 29th, 1850 by Pope Blessed Pius IX in a decree of heroic virtues, and was later beatified. With one more miracle, Blessed Maria Angela Astorch will become Saint Maria Angela Astorch. For more information on the saints who are featured on They Might Be Saints, check out theymightbesaints.com. And for those people who want to tune into the television series, which airs on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, coming up on They Might Be Saints is Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovich. The short, impactful life of Teresa Demjanovich is presented in her case for canonization as a Sister of Charity, which includes the one and only known cure of bilateral macular degeneration. This is one of my favorite episodes of They Might Be Saints. Check that one out, Wednesday, December 13th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with church historian Dan Chile about the canonization cause of Venerable Fulton Sheen, where it stands, and what we know about the incredible life of this future saint. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter. On EWTN, here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show and tune into my series on EWTN television, They Might Be Saints, know I love looking at the causes of potential American saints. And we have as many as 24 who have advanced to venerable and beyond in the United States. And one of those who is at venerable, but probably should be at blessed, is Fulton John Sheen. Of course, you know him as the bishop for his famous programs, Life is Worth Living, his two Emmy Awards, etc. He's perhaps the most famous media priest or bishop of all time. And for all of us in Catholic media, we have a debt of gratitude to pay to Fulton J. Sheen. And what's fascinating about his sainthood cause is he's the only person in the entire Catholic Church who has a miracle attributed to his intercession who is not a blessed, who is marooned at venerable. And there's some interesting things going on right now where his cause is stalled. And we're so excited today to talk with Dan Cheely, church historian and expert on Fulton Sheen, and about where his cause stands today and the impact of this great media bishop. Welcome back to the show, Dan.
Well, it's always great to be with you, Michael, and it's even better to be able to talk about Fulton Sheen, my hero.
Yeah, I know. You refer to him as your hero, and growing up and beyond, you've really admired him. What was it about Fulton Sheen that sort of caught your attention?
Well, I'll never forget the first time I saw him on TV. I was a little shaver. I was about 6 or 7 years old, and his program was on at my grandparents' house, and everybody was watching him. And it was black and white, the days of black and white TV. And there was even coming through, okay, just seeing him, a little kid, I didn't understand what he was saying, but he just seemed to be so energized. His eyes were flashing. He was speaking with such earnestness that I said to myself, you know, I don't understand a word of what this priest is saying, okay? But I really want to know. He's very smart. And someday, I'm gonna find out what he's saying. Someday I'm gonna learn, and so I then was interested in him. My grandparents had a little abridged version of the Life of Christ lying around their house. I started reading his stuff, and as I got older, I started reading as much as he wrote prodigiously. I mean, he wrote all kinds of books, and I started reading as many of them as I could get my hands on. That's a lot. And basically, he got me interested in the faith, not only on an intellectual basis, but also on a personal basis, because it was never just theory with him. It was always trying to link his listener up with Jesus Christ himself, trying to get the person to pray. He got me to pray to not only our Lord, but also to the Blessed Virgin. And, you know, once you start doing that, I mean, you know, can't even bar the door. You know, like, once you open, as St. John Paul used to say, open wide the doors of your heart to Jesus Christ, you know, he comes in. And it's only he can with his incarnate goodness. And I have to thank Fulton Sheen for getting me interested in that.
And you weren't the only one who was captivated by him. I mean, he was big time with radio shows and television shows and winning Emmy Awards, beating out Lucille Ball, for example, and being on the cover of Time magazine. Talk about the impact or the attraction that all of America, Catholics and non-Catholics, had to Fulton Sheen.
Well, this is an exciting and dynamic story. I remember that fortunately in my life, and it's pretty old now, I've been in the presence, even close enough to shake hands with people who are on the altars already. Okay, I got to talk briefly with Mother Teresa, with Blessed Alvaro del Portillo, with Fulton Sheen a number of times. I was within 5 inches, half a foot of John Paul II, saw him operating at close range, and others. I mean, Mother Angelica, Alice von Hildebrand, John Harden, others. But they had tremendously different personalities. But there was one thing they all had in common. They were able, just by who they were, to communicate a spiritual energization. They had, like, for example, Fulton Sheen's personality is completely different than Blessed Alvaro del Portillo or the Servant of God, John Harden. They were John Harden and Alvaro Portillo were quiet people, you know, reserved, almost private persons. Okay, where Sheen was a live wire. Okay, so totally different. But that same energization, it made you, you felt a kind of a happiness in their presence. You felt energized for God. And they were able to communicate that in a spiritual way. It didn't really matter what they said. And that really was something else. Originally, when they gave Sheen his program, it was originally on ABC, it was a throwaway. They had, at that time, in that spot where he was, on CBS, I think, was Milton Berle. Okay. And Milton Berle was known as Mr. Television. I mean, he was funny. I mean, he had all kinds of gags. He had an electric presence as well, okay, of a different kind. Funny as could be. Zany, okay, and everybody was watching him. And everybody had to try to compete. The other big stations had to try to compete with Milton Berle. And so at NBC, they decided to put on the chairman of the board. They put Frank Sinatra on NBC. So you got Frank on NBC. Okay, you got Milty on CBS. So ABC said, there's no way we can compete with these guys. We're supposed to give a certain amount of time. It was the rules of the game at that time. It's no longer that way. But do some kind of public service TV, something that is just like a charitable thing. Let's put this guy, Fulton Sheen, this Catholic bishop who had a popular radio program, he's asked for something. Let's put him on. It's a throwaway, okay? But it doesn't matter because we're losing anyway. We can't beat out Milton Berle. We certainly can't beat out Milton Berle, Frank Sinatra combined. Well, guess what? Uncle Fulty, okay, they call him Uncle Fulty because he used to call Milton Berle Uncle Milty, beat out both of them. Wow. He had higher ratings than both of them. He had an audience composed not just the Catholics. Catholics were only about a quarter of the population of the United States at the time. All kinds of people were watching, Jews, Catholics, Protestants, nothing. And he was pretty electrified. He was that for years.
That is amazing. And I think when we see canonizations, of course, we see the canonizations of people who perhaps are known to the world, but there are, of course, those who are completely unknown, the Fatima children, for example. But beyond the television personality, besides all the acclaim and attention and media work, what were the heroic virtues of Fulton J. Sheen?
Well, he had a tremendous talent, okay, but he also had a tremendous capacity for work. And actually, interestingly enough, as politically incorrect as it sounds today, for purity, okay. And let me give you an example of that. He was associated with all kinds of famous and beautiful people in Hollywood, because what happened often was, and that was the beginning of his close friendship with Claire Booth Luce, people would refer others to him. They'd say, hey, I met, first it was Monsignor Sheen, and he's really a gifted person. He can really counsel. Can you, I think you should meet him too. And by Claire Booth Luce, for example, who was probably one of the most famous American women in the country at the time. She was a congresswoman. She was an authoress. She was beautiful. She was married to Henry Luce, one of the richest men in the United States. She had it all. Okay. But she lost her daughter, her oldest daughter, in a tragic car accident and basically went into a horrible depression. And I think it was Anne Blythe, the movie star Anne Blythe, told her, you should talk to Fulton Sheen. And she said, I don't believe in that nonsense. I don't think. That's not, what is he going to do for me? Bring her back? No, I don't need pie in the sky. Okay, she's a bitter person. But she said, what do you have to lose? Go talk to him. Well, to make a wonderful long story short, and I'd love to tell you the whole story of that sometime, but after meeting Fulton Sheen, it wasn't overnight, by the way, either. It was several meetings. She converts to Catholicism and becomes a Catholic for the rest of her life. And also two people who knew her, that her personality dramatically changed. I mean, she had been basically dog-eat-dog type person, you know, look out for number one. And there was a whole new dimension of charity, and therefore friendships and tenderness that were present in Claire Booth Lewis post her contact with Fulton Sheen and the Catholic Church that she had beforehand. So it's that those stories can be multiplied by the dozens. Another time, he was asked to come to Peoria, where he's buried now, thank God. And he, it was a celebrating his anniversary as of his ordination, and so there's a big crowd there. And Archbishop Sheen at this point asked the pastor of the church, that the first church where he had been assigned to, because I see a woman in this crowd. She's got a sad face. Do you know her? And they said, I've never seen her before. Archbishop, I don't know who she is. I want to talk to her. Bring her over here. Well, it turned out somehow in this crowd of hundreds of people, he saw a woman who was deeply in need, okay? And he talked with her for about 15 minutes, and the woman had suffered for any Catholicism. She had had all kinds of personal problems. She met with her for 20 minutes, and then he introduced her to the pastor. The pastor took care of her, and for her, the rest is personal history. I mean, it's just, I used to joke, and this was almost completely true. If you were riding on a plane, and he never rode on first class, you know, he liked to ride, you know, with the regular people. If you were sitting next to Fulton Sheen on a ride from New York to Chicago, if you weren't a Catholic, you'd get interested by the time you hit Chicago. And if you were a Catholic, you're probably going to go to confession before you hit Chicago. Because he was really amazingly apostolic. He firmly, firmly believed in the wisdom and the truth of Christ and the Catholic Church, and he was able to communicate that with great gusto and great effectiveness.
Amazing. We're talking today with Dan Cheely about Fulton J. Sheen, the venerable bishop who's on the path to sainthood. And speaking of the sainthood of Fulton J. Sheen, his canonization cause opened in 2002, and Pope Benedict recognized his heroic virtue in 2012. And then after that, you need a miracle to advance on to the status of blessed. And we all know that in 2019, Pope Francis approved a miracle for James Fulton Engstrom, a boy who was born without breath, with the inability to take oxygen for 61 minutes, as maybe it was, and he came back to life. And that is the miracle that has been used, that will be used towards his beatification. But his beatification was postponed. I had a ticket to go. I was planning to go. I had a ride to go to that beatification.
And we were going to go together.
We were going to go together, Dan. And that was in Illinois, of course. We're both Illinois guys. So we were going to go attend that. And it got postponed or canceled. And of course, his sainthood cause has been tricky all the way up to that point anyway, with his relics being in New York or Peoria and the whole dispute over that. What's going on right now, Dan, as far as his canonization cause goes?
Because he was a single-minded person, okay, he made a lot of enemies. Okay, people were jealous of him. He was not a compromiser, okay, and he got into a humongous dispute with Cardinal Spellman. To make a long story short, had been kind of commissioned, and he was the head of the Society for the Propagation of the Faith in the United States. And in the post-war era, where Europe and Asia were all, you know, completely torn apart, America was trying to figure out how can we best funnel foreign aid to these, you know, destroyed countries and make it count, where it's not going to go, you know, into somebody's pocket. And they thought, well, let's do it to the Catholic Church. Catholic Church is everywhere. They got churches and, you know, monks, nuns who can pass this stuff out. And let's go with them. So Sheen ended up in charge of that. Those mechanics, and he's just going through the books. He finds money missing. What the heck? There's money that came in it's not accounted for and going out. So he can't figure this out. So he asked Spellman, what's the story? I can't understand. We got an X amount and X minus something, is not accounted for. Spellman says to him, well, we're taking that, okay? Because, hey, we're distributing this stuff. I mean, I think we got a right to have a little bit of a hearing charge. And she tells him, no, you can't. It's not our money. Oh, no, you don't understand, young man. This is the way the world works. I mean, they expect us to do it. What? Put it out in the open then. Why can't you do that? And he's, it's not, it'll cost too much trouble. Listen, you got a big future ahead of you, okay? Don't muff it, okay? Trust me on this. And she says, we can't, Your Eminence. It's not our money. He takes it all the way to the Pope. Pope Pius XII backs. Sheen is right. Spellman was embarrassed. Spellman became Sheen's inveterate enemy, at that point. And one of the things that Spellman did was he hired investigators to tail Sheen. He said, look, this guy is playing, he's got these starlets and everything that he converted in Hollywood, Virginia Mayo and others. Something funny might be going on. I want you to follow him and I want you to get the goods on him. Well, they follow him for 2 years, and they come back and they tell Spellman, we can't get anything on this guy. Every time he's with a woman, there's someone else there. He's never alone with him. Okay, the only time he's alone is when every day he spends an hour before the Blessed Sacrament in prayer, no matter what town or country he's in. He gets other people to be in church to pray by themselves and stuff too. He's as clean as a whistle. We can't find anything on him. Okay, so he said, okay, I guess we got to drop so much for that. But this is what kind of a guy he was. He was what we call the real McCoy. I mean, the whole thing. He wasn't going to water down the medicine. He was going to give it to you straight, okay? And giving it to people straight, it was powerful. He converted a lot of people. And he still converts people today. I run into people who were way younger than I am who picked up books from Fulton Sheen and all of a sudden got interested in Catholicism. I mean, he writes in a different style than we have today. His style is nothing like mine. Okay, I've got this kind of down-home Chicago, blue-collar style. This guy, had a much more elegant, Thomistic, style. But he knew he was very much culturally enriched. He could quote literature. He could quote the arts. He knew the news like the back of his hand. He was he was definitely a Renaissance man in the best sense of the word, and he was God's man. I mean, he always said, the world may be saying one thing, and I would rather I'm with the church, okay, and I'd rather be even if the church is wrong in its teaching. And I don't think they are. I would rather be wrong with them than right with the ones that are going the other way.
Amazing.
I don't care about being right. I care about being. I don't want to be me. I want to be God. And yeah, that's the way.
What an incredible example for us, Venerable Fulton Sheen. We're all praying for his canonization cause, that he does get to be beatified sometime soon. Perhaps it'll be some years before we see this rightfully happen. But what an incredible example for us, even in our modern day. Well, we're so grateful to you, Dan Cheeley, church historian and expert on Fulton Sheen, your hero, for talking to us about some of your memories and the great memory of Fulton Sheen. Thanks so much for being with us on today's program.
Thanks for the opportunity.
God bless. That was Dan Cheeley talking about Fulton J. Sheen. He and I had plans to go to the beatification together of Fulton Sheen until that was postponed, and maybe we'll be rejoining forces again when that beatification is relaunched. Who knows when that will happen, but something to pray for. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guests today, Julia Leinberg, talking to us about Our Lady of Loretto, and Dan Cheeley, church historian, talking about Venerable Fulton Sheen. Check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter this week. The Holy House of Loretto is where the Virgin Mary is believed to have lived and received the Annunciation. But how did it get from Nazareth to its current home in Italy? I'll be investigating in this latest episode. Check out my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out from 10 books and available at EWTNRC.com. I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.